This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. What do you think when you see a fat person? What do you think when you look in the mirror? So far in our series on obesity, we've talked quite a bit about the costs of obesity to both individuals and to society. In this third part, we want to ask you about changing attitudes towards the overweight. On one hand, we try to accept people for who they are and not judge them by how they look. Another set of cultural messages, TV, movies, magazines, very rarely says that Zaftig is sexy. Specialized marketers, though, say very different things to large people who want to make clothes or beds. Intellectually, we know that obesity costs us hundreds of thousands of lives and billions of dollars every year. But is it unacceptable, like, for example, smoking? Join the conversation. Our phone number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Peter Stearns. He's provost and professor of history at George Mason University, the author of Fat History, Bodies and Beauty in the Modern West. He's looked into the ups and downs of gaining weight historically and culturally. He joins us now from his office in Fairfax, Virginia. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
In America, you'd have to say the mainstream cultural message is that fat is bad. Was it always that way?
Oh, no, definitely not. It's about 110 years old. Traditionally, in the United States, while there was certainly a premium placed on thinness for a few groups, a certain degree of plumpness, not outright obesity, but a certain degree of plumpness was regarded as attractive, a sign of health, prosperity, and good character.
What changed in 1890?
Well, in the 1890s, we had a spate of new fashions that began to put a new premium on slenderness. I think we began to worry about new kinds of diseases, including heart and arterial disease, as opposed to the older killers that were mainly germ-based. And insurance companies and, in their wake, doctors began to take a new role in defining what we were supposed to be like.
What about other countries? Do they have different attitudes to fat than we do?
Some of them are actually more rigorous than we are and actually more successful. Other cultures, at least traditionally, were even more tolerant of a good degree of body weight as a sign of beauty and prosperity. And some of those attitudes linger in some of the subcultures that flourish in the United States.
Give us a for instance.
Well, one of the easy for instances is Hawaiians used to place a massive premium on body size for women as a sign of attractiveness. And while they've mainly been subdued by mainstream American standards, there's still a certain tension there. Some of the same tension exists in the African-American community, where there are different beauty standards from those touted by mainstream United States authorities.
The French, as a country, the French are not as fat as Americans. What is their attitude towards being fat, and how can attitude make a difference?
Well, attitude makes a difference in several ways. First of all, if you really believe that being thin is important, you start with clearer rules in childhood than we manage in the United States. The French are stricter with children, and I think this shows up for them. There's also a discussion about what kinds of strictness is desirable for adults. The French place a premium on beauty as a standard. We do that to an extent, but mm-hmm. We're a little bit more moralistic in our approach to fat, and some people argue that that's counterproductive.
Moralistic how?
Well, in arguing that fat people have bad character. That's an argument that began to surface in the early 20th century. We've toned it down now because, as you said earlier, we like to be nice to everybody. But there's still a strong connotation that if you're fat, there must be something wrong with your psyche or character. Otherwise, you'd be able to exercise proper self-control.
What was the origin of that, or at least the first observation of it?
Well, again, as the United States turned to thinner body standards, we did what we often do, and that is people who can't measure up are morally deficient. We did the same thing with smokers. It simply worked better there.
As you say, it's pretty hard to argue that America is not obsessed with being what's the old line, you could never be too rich or too thin. Yet, at the same time, our more and more of us are letting out more and more loops in our belt.
No question, and there's something very troubling about that tension.
Yet, how do you explain the contradiction?
Well, obviously, what we say, what we believe, how we evaluate even ourselves just doesn't correspond to the kinds of eating that's offered to us and our need to eat. The change in the last couple decades, simply in the location of food supplies, is an indication that something else is pushing us to eat more than we used to, even though officially we know we're supposed to be thin.
Officially, we know we're supposed to be thin. That's to find acceptance and to be normal, yet a lot of us reject a lot of aspects of mainstream culture in many other regards.
No question, and obviously many individuals sort of are not happy with how they look, but they're not unhappy enough to do much about it.
There is also an increasing view that being fat is not, as you said, the old moralistic view, but rather an environmental aspect, that it's the fault of others, the marketers who sell us so many French fries.
Obviously there's been some very interesting studies recently on increased portion size. There's no question our eating habits have changed. As more women have gone out to work, we've become more dependent on prepared foods, either from supermarkets or restaurants. So I don't at all question that the environment has changed, and that's important. Still, I mean, we are not forced to eat those large portions. I think there's more involved.
Peter Stearns, we know you have to run and teach a class.
That is correct.
But we wanted to thank you for being with us today.
It is my pleasure. Thank you.
Nice of you to take the time. Peter Stearns is a provost and professor of history at George Mason University, the author of Fat History, Bodies and Beauty in the Modern West, and he joined us from his office in Fairfax, Virginia. Jonathan Rauch is a journalist and columnist for the National Journal and the Atlantic Monthly. He joins us now from his office in Washington, D.C. to talk about what he thinks of America's latest bout against obesity, and good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
So why do you think there's all this focus on fat right now?
Well, three things are happening at once. First, you've got some lawyers who've discovered that companies like McDonald's have very deep pockets and are going after them and hope to get rich, which they may. Second, you have a public health establishment that is looking for ways to improve the national health, and having done tobacco, they're now looking at overweight. And they're prepared to go after people who are overweight. And third, you've got an ideological angle from a certain group of people that thinks that Americans' personal fatness is sort of symbolic of the country's oversized presence in the world. You know, it's a big energy hog, it's a diplomatic bully, and even the people in America are fat. So you hear that aspect of it as well.
You describe this as snobbery.
In an article, yeah, I think there's an element of snobbery, a sense of, can you believe how big and fat these Americans are these days?
In terms of unhealthy behavior, has obesity become the new cigarette smoking?
Well, it's starting to look as though people are going to make it that way. But you know, there's a problem with this, Neil, which is that if you look at the health figures, on balance, as Americans have gotten fatter, they've also gotten healthier. Morbidity and mortality are lower than at any time in American history. People are getting healthier on balance. So it's not as though there's a public health crisis. It's some people saying, well, we could be even healthier than we are now if we ate less and lost weight. Well, okay.
Maybe it's because we're smoking a little less.
Well, we're smoking a little less, but it's a lot of it is, of course, improved medical care, which is saving lives. But generally, we're taking better care of ourselves in many ways. We're living longer. It's not clear that there's any obesity crisis at all, just some people who want to create one.
Yet people who get paid to study these things tell us it costs us many billions of dollars a year in health care and driving up your insurance rates, by the way, in addition to costing 300,000 lives.
Sure. No one's saying that being overweight is good for you. It is not. It's not to be encouraged. On the other hand, you know, we make a lot of lifestyle choices that are not optimal. We drive our cars more than perhaps we ought to. We go skiing, a very dangerous thing to do. And the bottom line, I think, is treat people like adults, give them the facts, and let them get on with their lives and make their own decisions. But don't try to nag them, because that tends to be counterproductive. And in America, it's polarizing the debate. You're beginning to see a politicized debate over fat.
We want to hear your attitudes about your views on how you look at fat people, even if you're fat yourself. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. David joins us on the line from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi. I just want to say I have a 13-year-old daughter in school, and she's normal weight. According to the doctor, she's on the charts, and height and weight are normal, within normal range. But she's slim. And her friends, both female and male, often harass her and accuse her of being anorexic. And I'm not sure that a lot of kids know what normal weight should look like anymore, because a lot of these friends that harass her, they're not really obese, but they're certainly much heavier than used to be what you'd see in kids that age.
And she's 13 years old?
Yes.
And this is sort of schoolyard taunting? Is that the extent of it?
Yes, but it's enough that it makes her feel really bad. And, you know, she doesn't want to gain weight, but she just feels, you know, they don't like her, and she feels harassed, just like if a kid is harassed for some kind of a handicap or other things. And it's just because her, you know, she's slim. She's tall and slim.
Well, Jonathan Rausch, I guess that speaks to the... thanks very much for the call, David. We appreciate it. And we wish your daughter, by the way, the best of luck. And 13's a tough age, no matter what you do, and get through it.
But it
does speak to this obsession that we seem to have with our body images.
Well, that's right, and a tendency to pass over perhaps too readily into moralizing about our body images, turning these things into, as Professor Stern said, a question of character instead of just a question of how you happen to be.
Let's take another call. Shylon joins us from Canton, Michigan.
Hi, I listen to your show every day. I'm an anthropologist, and I teach at a community college, and I also happen to be, I consider myself overweight, but my husband is a physician, and, you know, medically I'm considered obese. When I did study abroad as an undergrad in Africa, the attitude was totally different. I lived in East Africa for about 4.5 months. And I actually received multiple marriage proposals just because I was fat. And the first week I was shocked because people would say, oh, my God, you're so nice and fat. You know, are you married?
Huh.
And it was totally different than here. I mean, I have a lot of cousins who, by American standards, are extremely beautiful, very slim and athletic. And so I was used to just being kind of the brainy one, you know. So it was very interesting to have the reversal. And I had almost forgotten what it was like to be fat in America until I came back. And everything changed again.
I wonder, did you look at yourself in the mirror in a new way?
I did. Actually, my self-esteem, I mean, I never felt, like, bad about myself because I think I'm a nice person.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm happy with the gifts and talents that God has given me. But the thing is that when I was in Africa, like, I mean, even my own family, I think a lot of overweight people will notice this. Your family will point out, like, oh, well, you're getting big or you need to lose weight. And people are always bugging you. And, I mean, I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't eat pork. I'm extremely conscious about everything else. I probably eat about an extra 100 calories or 200 a day that I don't need, maybe like eating at Taco Bell for lunch instead of cooking. But it's not a matter of, like, being greedy or something. And the attitudes are just so much different in other cultures. I mean, I've lived in Europe. My dad was in the Army. And I've been exposed to lots of different cultures, especially with my job. And I really didn't want to leave Africa. I wanted to stay. And if I could have made money doing something over there, I think I would have stayed in Kenya.
Well, Shailana, thanks very much for the call. Keep listening, will you?
Thanks. You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Jonathan Rausch, thank you very much for your time today as well.
Thank you for having me, Neil.
Jonathan Rausch is a journalist and columnist for the National Journal and the Atlantic Monthly, and he was with us from his office here in Washington, D.C. We're talking about the contradictory attitudes towards being overweight and the confusing, sometimes, messages that we get from the culture. Is it something we're learning to accept, or is it the new cigarette smoking in terms of unhealthy behavior? Our phone number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email TOTN at npr.org. Back after a break, I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We'll be right back. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing what it's like being fat in America today. What do you think when you see a fat person? Sympathy? Repulsion? Join our discussion. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Overweight people are now the majority in this country, with 65% of adult Americans overweight or obese. Many segments of our society are catering to their needs. The FAA, for example, has instructed airlines to add 10 pounds to the standard passenger weight calculation. Doctors now use longer needles to penetrate thicker layers of fat when administering vaccines or drawing blood. Did you know that today's size 10 was sold as a women's size 14 in the 1940s? And as for you guys and some gals, the Boston Red Sox decided to rebuild Fenway Park because the seats are too narrow for today's baseball fan. The new seats are now 4 inches wider. Donna Jarrell is part of the new majority. She's a self-described fat American who teaches writing at Ohio State University and is co-editor of What Are You Looking At?, the first fat fiction anthology. And she joins us from member station WOSU in Columbus, Ohio. And good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Oh, thank you, Neil.
Your book, I guess, is another sign that being fat has become a more universal American experience.
Well, yeah, I think it is. I've been a fat person all my life. I was a fat child, a fat teenager, a fat mother, a fat professor.
And how did you see yourself at those various stages?
Well, when I was a child, I bought my clothes in the chubby department at Sears. And so I was immediately aware that I was different from my friends who didn't have to buy their clothes in the chubby section. And then in high school, I have three sons, and we were looking at the pictures of me in high school, and they said, "Mom, you were such a babe." And I thought, you know, I wasn't very fat then, but I was way fat in my head.
That's one difficulty that a lot of people have, that even if they were never fat, or even if they lost the weight, they still see themselves as a fat person.
Right, right.
Now, you've collected stories from some impressive authors in this book, Dorothy Allison, Andre Dubus. What made you decide to collect stories using fat as the criterion?
Well, Ira and I were students in the MFA program at Ohio State University.
Ira's your co-editor, yeah.
Yes, he is. And we were both overweight. We were both writing about fat and sort of had come to the conclusion that of all the life experience that we had, fat was the most defining experience in terms of our identity.
Really?
And that fat had limited us and contained us in ways that nothing else had. And so since we were both writing about fat and our fat experience, we decided that we would look through literature to see what other writers had said and written about fat.
Do you think there's a fear of fat in this country?
Absolutely. I think it's a driving force in this country.
And in what way?
You know, I guess growing up, I mean, one of the worst things that I felt I could be in terms of displeasing my parents was to be fat. That fat somehow represented that moral deficiency that we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it shamed my parents that somehow they weren't raising me right. You know, I think that my children, I have a child now who is almost 17, and will not go work out because he perceives himself to be too fat. And
doesn't want to get laughed at in the weight room.
Right, doesn't want to go out to the gym. And he's, you know, he's not that overweight.
Let's get some more callers in. Jen joins us now from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment, and actually after listening to her speak a little bit, I'm a fat person. I would be the first person to joke about my weight. And my friends are very accepting of me. I'm very outgoing and have a good attitude towards life. And no matter how many times you hear, "Oh, but you look great, you have a great attitude," there's always that nagging voice inside your head that says, "No, you don't fit in. You're mm-hmm. too fat. All these people are thin and beautiful, and you know what makes you think you could fit in with this crowd?" And it's always there. and I'm a mom now, and I'm raising three kids, and one of whom is borderline overweight. He's headed there, and I'm trying to put a stop to it now so he doesn't have to deal with all the things I dealt with, like, growing up. And it wasn't so much high school, but junior high, before I, like, was able to come out of my shell and open up to people and start being friendly and outgoing. And I would never, ever, ever wish that on anybody, especially my own child. And it's just, I look around and hear, you know, you guys are saying 65% of America is overweight. Where are all these overweight people? I look around.
You're in Hawaii.
And it may just be where I live. I don't know. But I was thinking that actually the other day I was looking around. I was in a crowd of people and I was like, you know what? 65% of these people are not overweight. Well, I was the minority.
Last week we did an interview about the fattest city in America, which is San Antonio, Texas, or at least at the moment. So maybe that's where they all are.
Yeah, maybe I need to move there. But, yeah, I just wanted to make that comment that, you know, no matter how outgoing you are and, you know, what size you are, there is always that nagging feeling. And I even have thin people who have the same issues, you know, with they're not happy with their weight because they think they're too thin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just something that America has brought out, you know, just society discussing it and thinking that everybody has to be perfect. Well, what happened to the perfect 5'4", 140-pound woman?
Mm-hmm.
Why is she now 5'10", 110 pounds?
No. Yeah, well, Jen, good luck, okay?
Thank you.
And good luck with your son, too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I wanted to read an email we got from Marcia in Phoenix, which is somewhat along the same lines. I am a formerly fat woman who has lost, gained, and lost the same 80 pounds four times in the past 12 years. Even though I should be able to empathize with overweight people as a thin person now, I find myself constantly looking down upon and berating overweight people when I see them in public. Maybe this is because I'm so fearful of gaining back that loathsome weight that I lost that I'm disgusted by obesity when I see it in others. Well, that says a lot about something.
Wow, yeah, it does. I was thinking about Jen calling and how when you're fat, you always have that sense of no matter what you do, you're never good enough. It's never enough. And it's like you can earn an A, but it automatically drops to a B because you're fat. And I guess I feel really fortunate that that I've had a lot of people in my life accepting of weight. And my son said to me one day, I was going to change clothes because I was going somewhere. I looked really big, I thought. Mm-hmm. And my son said to me, my oldest son, he said, "Mom, who cares if you look fat as long as you look good?" And that was just a really profound moment in my life. And I began to realize that I could look good and look fat. And I guess that's what happens when people lose weight and they gain it back and they lose weight, and that somehow the internal reconciliation, the self-acceptance that the book is about, that what are you looking at is about self-acceptance. It's about recognizing our value as human beings despite any condition, including obesity. And when we can come to that self-acceptance, then I think that we can move away from the judgment, away from the fear of, away from there's a sense of, you know, when you're fat, that if people are really afraid or uncomfortable with obesity, you feel as if you're contagious, you know, that people don't want to get too close to you because they're afraid that they'll catch, you know, whatever it is that's making you fat. So I guess that part of the book is about trying to find that sense of self-acceptance, coming to terms with our humanity. To be fat means to be vulnerable and to give in to temptation, to give in to our weaknesses, to be filled with desire, all the things that make us human beings. And it's almost as if our culture is driving us to be mechanical instead of human by imposing these rigid standards of weight.
Yet, imposing rigid standards of weight. As individuals, we can all empathize. But as a society, again, billions of dollars a year, 300,000 lives. That's a lot of cost.
It is a lot of cost, Neil. But I think that I was listening this morning to some of the other shows that you've done on obesity, and I was thinking about a few years ago when I went to the doctor, and she said to me, you know, and this was the most refreshing medical moment of my life. She said, you know, it's not unhealthy to be obese. It's what's unhealthy is the lifestyle that's implied by your obesity. And so when we go after fat people and say, you know, use them as the markers for the millions or billions of dollars that they're costing us each year, you know, it is a form of discrimination, and why not just say, you know, everybody needs to be doing these things, because I can weigh 211 pounds and walk 3 miles a day and have decent cholesterol and decent blood sugar and decent blood pressure. So, you know, and it seems like to me that we place so much emphasis on trying to get to a particular size, and that, you know, that we need to, you know, sort of redirect our goal toward health, you know, that we need to adopt healthy lifestyles. And if thinness is a consequence of a healthy lifestyle, so be it. But if thinness isn't that consequence, then, you know, don't call me. I get called beached whale. I don't get called beach diabetic.
Let's get some more callers in. Lydia joins us now from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi. I'm calling because, well, first in response to two different callers, but then I also have a question. I'm a naturally thin person. I've never had to worry about my weight. And when I was a teenager, this was an issue for me. I hid myself under my clothes, and I worked at a supermarket, and a lot of times I would get comments from older women commenting about my weight in a negative way, saying, oh, you must be anorexic or something like that. But overall, as an adult, I've been rewarded for being thin. People often admire how thin I am or make comments about my model-like figure, which always makes me feel a little bit self-conscious. Although in Africa, I got a very different reception, and that was why I was almost pitied for my looks. And it was remarked that...
Yeah, we had a call on that earlier. But
yes, it was remarked that I must have gotten my boyfriend because I was so smart, not because I was attractive. But I really don't feel that this reward I've gotten as an adult is deserved, because I don't work at it. This is just something that I've inherited. Mm-hmm. My family tends to be thin. But I've been close to two women who are considered heavy. One was a roommate and another one was a student of mine. And both of them worked really hard at being fit. They ate really well. They were much more active than I was. And so from my experience with them, it makes me wonder how much of this is a question of just accepting people a bit who they are. I agree that maybe there are some issues related to society, and maybe there are some personal blame issues, but I really also believe that people are just born in a certain way, and we just need to accept that as well, and not try and look for all these answers, but rather just work at overall being more accepting.
The genetic lottery, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much, Lydia. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller in. David joins us from Ann Arbor in Michigan.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, David.
Hi, I'm calling because I grew up overweight and always had a lot of problems in high school, you know, not having girlfriends and things like that. Well, when I left home, 18 to 20 years old, I lost 100 pounds. I went from about 260 to, you know, 160, 165. And the change in attitude that people had towards me made me angry. Suddenly, people who wouldn't have given me the time of day wanted to pay attention
exactly.
to me and give me that positive attention. And it made me very angry for many years to think if I weighed what I weighed 2 years ago, these people wouldn't give me the time of day.
Were you angry at them or angry at yourself or both?
I think I was more angry at society for valuing thinness so much that I wasn't considered to be a person worth getting to know until I was thin. All of the topics of conversation and all my experience were the same, but people just valued my opinion more and wanted to talk to me more socially because I was thin.
Hmm. Angry at society. Boy, that's a fairly big abstract. How did you manage to, you know, focus on it?
focus on it in what way?
I mean, what was it that would trigger your anger? You were angry at society. I mean, that's
I would run into someone who I had known in high school years later, mm-hmm. you know, working in the area, and that they would all of a sudden want to talk to me, want to give me their number.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that if this had been 3 years before, that it wouldn't have been like that. So I guess that I just felt it was completely unjust that these people mm-hmm. were now interested in who I was. And it, you know, they didn't seem to be, you know, any different. They just treated me differently and wanted to talk to me because mm-hmm. I was thin. And I'd known them for years before since I was a child, and I wasn't interesting until I was thin.
Well,
so they maybe weren't interested in the real you.
That's exactly what the feeling was. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to get to know them now because they had written me off before, and now that I was thin, how am I more valuable to you now?
Mm.
It was kind of disheartening, disillusioning.
Well,
go ahead.
Thinness is really posited as a solution in our society, and, you know, like, so I guess that leads me to ask what's the problem, you know, what are we trying to solve, and what is it that we think thinness will get us that we can't get while we're overweight? And that's exactly, you know, Dave's story is exactly what it will get us. It will get us the attention and admiration of others, at least on the superficial level.
Which opens doors which weren't open before, and that hardly seems
right.
Fair.
Yeah. David, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Love the show.
Thank you. Let's see if we get one quick comment more from Jeremy in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We just have a minute, Jeremy. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, I mean, I'm a good-sized person. I weigh almost 300 pounds, and I notice myself, but I haven't always been. I used to be a thinner person, a much skinnier person, about 80 pounds, and I'll notice myself slipping into that, those negative attitudes towards overweight and fat people, and really beat myself up over that now because I'm almost carrying on while being a part of the stereotype.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. So it must be difficult, again, looking at that mirror.
Oh, it's horrible to look at the mirror, especially when I know that I've said something or had a negative feeling about somebody else.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Jeremy, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, but we appreciate your phone call. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, good luck to you. And Donna Jarrell, thanks very much to you.
Thank you, Neil.
Donna Jarrell teaches writing at Ohio State University, co-editor of the book, What Are You Looking At?, the first fat fiction anthology. She joined us from the studios of member station WOSU in Columbus, Ohio. That's part three in our obesity series. Join us next week when we'll look at the emerging science in obesity research and ask whether there is such a thing as food addiction. That's next week at this time. When we come back, we're going to look at reports that the U.S. Army is going to have to extend the tours in Iraq of National Guard and Reserves. That's coming up next on Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This is NPR News.